This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio Free Radio.
This is for all my queens and queens, and all my kings in Kingston raising a baby in Babylon. If all of the sisters could fight for the brothers instead of fighting over the brothers, and all of the brothers could try to love their own instead of trying to own love, then maybe we could fight like X did instead of fighting our exes. And maybe if for a minute we stopped hating each other, we could do like Haiti and free each other. And ladies, ask Harriet Tubman what it should mean to railroad each other. Instead of selling each other out, we saw the soul in each other. And brothers, we need to stop pimping black women like we learned from Massa and be more like Selassie instead of selling asses. We used to go broke to go to school. Now we'd rather go broke than go to school. We were out in the hot fields dying to be cool. Now we're out in the streets dying to be cool, so we spend our last cent on those sweatshop shoes. We take our government check, but we don't check our government. We'll vote for American Idol, but not the president. So while our brothers sit idle and sing, sing, we don't care if our idols can sing, sing. And because we were sold to make sugar in Barbados and Bahamas, now we talk about getting those sugar daddies and sugar mamas. And when we talk about dead presidents, we mean cash and not Obama. We're all up in each other's business, but we can't get up in each other's businesses. And then we wonder why we still don't own shit. Instead of building like Egypt, we try to chip each other, and we'll rip each other off before we tip each other. And then we say, don't trip, brother. So we give each other props for still being property, and we fill our heads with hip-hop, but never with philosophy. And we buy anything unnecessary instead of by any means necessary. Black men call their home their crib, like they're so busy being children they can't raise their kids. And they call their woman their baby mama, but never give her that ring. We used to have to run away from the dogs so we could get married. Now we run away to be dogs instead of being called daddy. And because we used to feel the crack of the whip, now we sell crack to buy new whips. And instead of getting that diploma, we'd rather dip. So instead of working in that office and wearing a white collar, we get collared by white offices just to make that dollar. We want to play above the rim so we can buy new rims instead of taking engineering and building that pyramid. We know everything about Judge Mathis and nothing about what math is. We're so used to being money, we've forgotten what cash is, and we can make that bank shot, but we don't know where the bank is. Because we're told we can play in the NBA, but we can't be an MBA, and we can be an MC, but not an MD or an MA, and we don't talk about racism, we just talk about player hating. We dream about going to Liberia, but we can't go to the library, so we're at our rights when we're sentenced instead of writing that sentence. We come from people who wrote the book of the dead. Now we either end up booked or dead. And maybe if we hung by our necks like our grandparents did, we wouldn't talk so hard about choking a bitch. And if we ever had to cut a lynching victim down, we'd think twice before we cut each other down to size, and maybe that's why we call each other shorty. We talk about shooting each other with 9s and 45s, but we don't talk about working that 9 to 5. I guess we spent so long on the auction block, but now we'd rather die than get off the block. So we end up on a chain gang in that jail, because when we join that gang, we can buy that chain, so we kill each other over shorting that weight, just like Massa did when he put cotton on the scale. Ask a slave to show you a hoe. Do you think he'd point at his sister in the next cotton row, or the tool in his hand used to make the cotton grow? And when he sees the overseer coming, ask him what it means to get low. Ask him to point out free black people. I bet he'd never say BET. And brother, I don't think he'd say you. And sister, I don't think he'd say me.
Okay, welcome back to the F Word. What you just heard was a clip of L. Jones performing at the Africville Reunion in Halifax this summer. So, and before that, we had No Luck Club, which is a local Vancouver act. So we have L on the phone right now, and we're going to talk to her a little bit about our topic as well. So, hi, L, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad. We're so excited to have you on the show this morning. Yeah, that performance just gives me chills every time I hear it. So I guess to get started, our listeners can learn a little bit more about you. So how did you get started writing and performing spoken word?
Well, I always wrote poetry, but it's a bit of a strange story because I think at university and just at my work, I was sort of suffering from a lot of racism, and it gets depressing. And in response, I start listening to a lot of music to kind of just hear black voices in my day. So to, you know, hear Lauryn Hill, I sort of start my day off, at least I can hear her talking to me and singing to me. So I guess I had all of that in my head, and I woke up one morning and I just had a poem, which has never happened to me. Like, straight, all the rhymes, everything, I didn't have to do anything to it. So I kind of wrote it out, and then I was like, well, what do I do with this? I can't rap, so, you know, I don't know what this is. And then literally the next day I saw someone on the street, and they were like, how come you never come out to poetry? And it's tonight, and you should come. So I was like, okay. So I went, and I decided to read it on the open mic, and it went from there.
Wow. So your work's obviously very political, and speaks to sort of your experience and collective experience. Why do you feel that spoken word and hip-hop have been used as such powerful tools of political activism?
Well, I think, I mean, the origins of hip-hop came out of, I mean, the Bronx, where it was the high, high unemployment, the heavy, when that community was really, really depressed. So people made out of nothing, hip-hop, you know, so you could make beats with your mouth. Grandmaster Flash was looking through the garbage, and he found a, to make the fade, you know, he found an off-on switch, and he rewired it sideways to make the fade for record players. It's still on every record player today. So it was people who had nothing using their own creativity. You know, if we don't have instruments, we don't have money for that, but we can use our own voices. So its roots are already political, you know what I mean? Because it's people that were responding to immense poverty and immense oppression and using, you know, their own human skills to rise out above that, which is what black people have always done, right, from the beginning of slavery.
Absolutely.
So it has that, I think, that connection. It's connected to the oral culture. And, I mean, it's not just black, obviously. I mean, spoken word, there's a lot of gay people that do it because, obviously, they're also responding to a lot of things in their lives. A lot of women will speak about feminist issues. So I think it tends to attract people that have something to say, and people who really have something to say, often people that feel a pressure of being silent.
Absolutely. So it's kind of giving a space to marginalized voices.
I think so, yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's not exclusively that. I mean, a lot of people, I mean, Shane Coizen is a famous Canadian poet, and but I mean, on the other hand, he's overweight, so maybe that, you know, who knows what motivates people. But I think particularly that idea of, you know, if you're slamming to have 3 minutes to say something, that's really motivating. You have to really think, but yeah, I have something to say to do that, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, we've been talking a lot about how hip-hop was born of an experience of oppression and a desire to reclaim a space, and then how it shifted to this mainstream culture of racism and sexism and consumerism. So what are your thoughts on this issue?
I think the first thing to understand is that hip-hop didn't create these things. It reflects it in a wider society.
So,
you know, it's not like misogyny got started when Dr. Dre dropped his first album.
Absolutely.
So, you know, things that happen in the black community also reflect things that happen in the wider mainstream community. So there's been a rise, I think, of those things in our general community that is reflected back into the black community. But I think when we're thinking about hip-hop, the first thing is, of course, we lost control of it. When you look at early hip-hop, it wasn't mainstream, but for that reason, it was people like Chuck D. You know, it was these young black men that were self-empowering themselves through their voices. And, of course, the more it gets sold out to record labels and to interest, then, you know, those mainstream names just want to make it into party music. That's what Dead Prez says, right? I know it's part of their plans to make us think it's all about party and dance, you know. So it's once we sell out those experiences to other people to make money, it's going to come back through money, right? So I think that's the first thing. The second thing is, of course, that I think misogyny is a reflection of violence, and racism is violence. So when our men suffer violence in their lives, it gets reflected onto the women in the community, which is something that Malcolm X talked about, right, that black men don't respect themselves because they're not taught to respect themselves in a mainstream society, so then how do they respect black women? So then they reflect back attitudes from the mainstream society about blackness onto the woman. So it's, I think, a lot of ways a function of racism. So it's not to be, I mean, we have to take responsibility for it in our communities, but I think it's a reflection of an overall kind of racism that does violence to black people, that causes us to do violence to ourselves.
Absolutely, and I think that's one of the most problematic things about critiques of hip-hop is it's often sort of comes from this idea that it's inherently misogynistic when it completely overlooks the experience of racism and sort of where that comes from. And I mean, and that's really tricky for someone to sit in a position of privilege and critique an experience and label it as violence without a thorough understanding of kind of where that experience comes from.
And I mean, in terms of, I mean, Eminem said some of the worst things I've ever heard, that people were comfortable calling him a genius.
Yeah.
No black person ever said something like, you know, your mother's a bitch, and talking in a song to a child. No black person ever did that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they might call other women, but nobody ever called their mother something, you know, no black person would do that. But because Eminem was drawing upon what he saw as a kind of anger and then sort of corrupting that further, but that was okay because he was white, and white people aren't seen as being pathological in the same way that black males are.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, it's put onto black people, but yeah, it's also a reflection of the fear of black males in society. So people will, I mean, I've said this before, but everyone complains about hip-hop, but we don't talk about how disgusting it is to watch Donald Trump firing people on TV at a time when unemployment and poverty is, you know, these are the greatest problems. That's what creates the ghettos. Unemployment, people not being able to get jobs. We don't see that as a violence, that we all sit down and watch people losing their jobs, right?
Absolutely. It's a complete contradiction in our society, and that we can pick and choose kind of the issues we're going to critique. So I guess I would ask you, what do you think we can do to challenge some of the violent messages without imposing censorship or without imposing kind of these racist judgments on hip-hop? Do you think there's something activists can do to reclaim the political roots of hip-hop?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. that's sort of a large question, because it's sort of the how do we defeat racism, I think. I mean, there also are a lot of people out there, so there, I think there has been a movement already, people like Mos Def, people like Common. Kanye West sometimes, but, you know, Talib Kweli, there's a lot of conscious hip-hop out there, and I think part of it is people being willing to participate in that market, because it's also what people want to be sold.
Mm-hmm.
75% of hip-hop is bought by white suburban people.
Yeah.
So part of it is that it's people that want to experience what they think is real life through hearing these stories about, you know, being shot or whatever, but that's what the market is for. If people themselves want a conscious market, the conscious market will return to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's partly giving artists, and there's so many out there. I mean, local artists, you know, people that are doing that work, it's being willing to listen to female voices. I mean, what happened to the women in hip-hop? There were a lot. Now there's not really any. Latifah's coming out with a new album, but I think she's kind of past her sell-by date, so I don't know. But, you know, like, so encouraging female voices, like being willing to sort of suspend the stereotypes of what you want to hear when you listen to black music, because I think people think, when it's my time to listen to hip-hop, I want to listen to party music and I want to hear this kind of thing. And they don't think that they want to listen to the serious music, take it as serious art, which should encourage, I think, more political voices.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like looking further for that music that represents those marginalized voices and goes back to talking about serious issues and going past kind of the top 40 stuff and really looking for political music.
Yeah, because I think that, you know, it's sort of people like to slum with black stuff a lot. So, you know, people like to sort of speak fake Ebonics and, you know, oh, it's so funny to pretend to be black. And then that image of blackness gets reflected, which is a very trivialized and dangerous image of blackness that doesn't reflect the true experiences of black people. And that's one thing we're happy about with Obama, you know, to see Michelle out there.
Yeah.
And to see her, and she's an atypical black woman in the sense of she's Michelle Obama, but she's not atypical for many, many women in the community that are mothers and professional women and are strong like that. And so that's one image that's out there that hopefully will get people to understand that, you know, what you see on a music video doesn't reflect us.
Absolutely.
You know, that kind of positive image. And it's our responsibility to increase our visibility that way, but it's also, you know, the other side of the responsibility is to stop asking us to be and stop narrowing us down, that to realize that, you know, the black community has much more to offer than this very narrow and cartoon version of ourselves, you know. And people want that because, you know, that's entertainment, right? That's what entertainment is, to watch other people humiliate themselves. it's our responsibility, ultimately, as a community. And, you know, we have to work on self-empowerment and our own relationships. This is what I say at the beginning of that poem, you know, if we fought for each other instead of over each other, you know, and that's on us. But it's also on other people to stop offering us money to degrade ourselves, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, well, we're going to have to wrap up, but is
okay.
There,
Sorry, thank you so much.
I was going to say, is there anything else in closing that you'd like our listeners to know on your thoughts on the topic?
No, I don't know. I mean, I think that just ultimately, I mean, we're in a shared enterprise together. I mean, listener and speaker. You can't be a speaker without a good listener. So for those who speak, I suppose, you know, speak with dignity and
thank you so much for speaking with us, Elle. Thank you. So that was Elle Jones. She's a spoken word artist from Halifax. So I definitely encourage listeners to check out more about Elle's spoken word online, I guess through Facebook, and about the Halifax Slam team and about spoken word events going on here in Vancouver, and stay involved in the political activism of spoken word. So you've been listening to The F Word on CFRO 102.7 FM. It's Vancouver's co-op radio in the downtown east side. For more information on the show or our work, please check out our website at feminisms.ca or email us at feminisms with an S at gmail.com.